sort of examining the pastime of Yashoda Damodar. It is multifaceted, you could say. And, well, there are different elements in the story. There are different elements, and there are different lessons, different points that come up. So this is what we've been doing since, I think, was it since Sunday morning? Saturday night? Where were we Saturday night?
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so since Sunday morning, that's right. Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. Then yesterday, Monday in Marlborough. And this evening we are here in Midrand, ISKCON, Midrand, with all you nice devotees. And we will examine things a bit further. Yes, we could, I think we could have a month-long seminar just on the Damodar Lila. All right, so what should we read this evening? I think we'll read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 9, Mother Yashoda Binds Lord Krishna. And I think tonight we will read verse 11. We're sort of going back and forth in the narration on Monday night. We went forward into the deliverance of Nalakuvra and Manigriva by Narada Muni, by Lord Krishna towards the end of the whole pastime. So let's go back in time, a little time travel, and talk about some of the earlier parts of the pastime and how the whole story evolved. So we'll read verse 11 then, and you can just repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Yes, sir. Very good. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.9.11. Kritagasam tam prarudantam akshani kashantam anjan masani swapanina udvikshamanam vaya viva lekshanam haste grihit va bishayant yavagurat. Translation. When caught by Mother Yashoda, Krishna became more and more afraid and admitted to being an offender. As she looked upon him, she saw that he was crying, his tears mixing with the black ointment around his eyes. And as he rubbed his eyes with his hands, he smeared the ointment all over his face. Mother Yashoda, catching her beautiful son by the hand, mildly began to chastise him. A local spider. Where's he going now? He's not going to get crushed between the pages. But it would not be a bad way to go. Crushed between the pages of the Bhagavatam. or crushed under the feet of a devotee dancing in kirtan. Oh, well, anyway, let's read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. From these dealings between Mother Yashoda and Krishna, we can understand the exalted position of a pure devotee in loving service to the Lord. Hare Krishna. Thank you kindly. It's nice to just begin again. From these dealings between Mother Yashoda and Krishna, we can understand the exalted position of a pure devotee in loving service to the Lord. Yogis, jnanis, karmis, and Vedantists cannot even approach Krishna. They must remain very, very far away from him and try to enter his bodily effulgence. Although this also they're unable to do. Great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva always worship the Lord by meditation and by service. Even the most powerful Yamaraj fears Krishna. Therefore, as we find in the history of Ajamil, Yamaraj instructed his followers not even to approach the devotees, what to speak of capturing them. In other words, Yamaraj also fears Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Yet, this Krishna became so dependent on Mother Yashoda that when she simply showed Krishna the stick in her hand, Krishna admitted to being an offender and began to cry like an ordinary child. Mother Yashoda, of course, did not want to chastise her beloved child very much, and therefore she immediately threw her stick away and simply rebuked Krishna, saying, "Now I shall bind you so that you cannot commit any further offensive activities, nor for the time being can you play with your playmates?" This shows the position of a pure devotee, in contrast with others, like jnanis, yogis, and the followers of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, in regarding the transcendental nature of the Absolute Truth. grammatical error. Okay, anyway, let's read the verse again. Kritagasantam prarudantam akshani kashantamanjan mashani swapani na udvikshamanam bayaviva lekshanam haste grihitva Bishayant Yavagurat. When caught by Mother Yashoda, Krishna became more and more afraid and admitted to being an offender. As she looked upon him, she saw that he was crying, his eyes mixing with the black ointment around his eyes. And as he rubbed his eyes with his hands, he smeared the ointment all over his face. Mother Yashoda, catching her beautiful son by the hand, mildly began to chastise him. Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaura Vani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastyajadesha Tani. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajkap Tarubhyas Chakripa Sindhu Vyayavacha Padidana Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, yes. Very nice to be here with you all. And such a wonderful time. And this is just a very wonderful part of the whole pastime, actually. You know, you can just take any verse from anywhere in this pastime. Every verse basically is revealing, opening up, throwing some light on some very beautiful aspect of the pastime and some lesson that we can learn from the pastime and that particular part of the pastime. So it's really just wonderful. So here we are right in the beginning of the pastime. Well, not right in the beginning, but in the earlier stages, that Mother Yashoda has already, you could say, abandoned Krishna to save the milk in the pot, which was boiling over, because as I think we may have mentioned one of the other days, milk is liquid religiosity. It's just an interesting point, sort of. Well, it's part of the narration, and it's just an interesting cultural point in Krishna consciousness that milk is liquid religiosity. Prabhupada said that on a number of occasions, and it's just part of the Vedic perspective on life that we shouldn't waste milk. If we do waste milk, then there will be consequences. There'll be consequences. Because it's like we're sort of abusing religion, something like that. So there was that point that it was just normal in Vedic times that milk was appreciated so much that, well, that people would never waste it, basically. You know, many years ago, it was in the 70s, in some country in South America, some propaganda was created to popularize Fanta, as an alternative to milk for children. Don't feed them milk, either the mother's milk or just the milk that you get. Don't feed them milk. Better that they get Fanta. And, you know, it just shows Kali Yuga what a mess this world is. And it became popular. And as a result, there was like a whole, not exactly a whole generation, but a lot of children for a period of time who were just drinking Fanta, and they developed different types of physical disabilities and conditions, and they became known as Fanta babies. So, you know, every now and then if you sort of keep up with some of the news to some degree, you know, it's really so, what would you say? It's so depressing, actually. If you want to get depressed, if you're feeling too undepressed, depressed, and what? Well, not oppressed, but anyway, yeah, if you're not feeling depressed enough, if you want to really get the idea, Kali Yuga, what's it like? You know, I want to understand it. Just look in the news. Don't worry, you'll be successful. So, yeah, you get, you know, every now and then there's some article from some expert about something's wrong with milk or dairy products, and it's too this or something that, or it's just crazy. But in Vedic times, they were well aware of the value of milk, and so they'd never waste milk. It was sacred. It was sacred, actually, just in and of itself. And so that was one reason why Mother Yashoda so, you know, staunchly made a point of saving the milk, even at the cost of displeasing her dear little boy, Krishna, who, of course, was so dear to her, but she didn't delay. She just put him down on the ground like that and saved the milk. And of course, the milk, a second point regarding the importance of that pot of milk, the milk was for Krishna. And she was not thinking that, yes, I'm breastfeeding him. This is the best thing, that I breastfeed him. It's the best for him. She was thinking that the cow's milk is best for him. Actually, yeah, not just her own milk, but actually the cow's milk is better for Krishna. And it's very important that Krishna gets his cow's milk. So therefore, she almost desperately went to save the milk. And, well, you all know the story, and we've talked about it on a few occasions already over the past few days, and even we were in Dubai, we talked about it in Dubai. Yes, she went to save the milk. Krishna became upset and broke the pot that she was churning the yogurt into butter in, broke some other pots, made a mess. And interesting little point, which is referred to in one of the previous verses, but there's just a very short little purport, so I didn't read it. That in the middle of all this, in the middle of all this, Krishna took a little break. And then he came back and continued eating milk and feeding the monkeys. But it seems like he smashed things, ate some butter, took a break, came back, ate some more butter, and started feeding it to the monkeys. And then Mother Yashoda came back. So anyway, there's a verse just a few verses before in which it said that when he took a break, Krishna went to some sort of isolated little corner of the house, something like that, where there was no one, and just sat down for a little while and cried and sulked and just felt bad. That, you know, Mata, why you do that, Mata? Something, really, some little mood like that, as happens, as we mentioned in Lens, as I recall, Prabhupada talks about the interactions between mothers and their children. There are all these sort of little dramas that take place, and little mood swings, and little ups and downs, and different things that happen, and someone gets a little, between mother and child, someone gets a little cross and the other one gets a little something else, and then they sort of patch it up, and then the other one becomes a little cross maybe, or something like this. These things are going on. So like this, Krishna went to this secluded little out-of-the-way spot within the palace of Nanda Maharaj, because it wasn't just like, you know, your typical suburban house. It was some type of palace, not a big, big palace, but it was some type of moderate palace. So Krishna found some place a little out of the way and sat, and well, actually the verse says, what does the verse say? It says, with false tears in his, being very angry and biting his reddish lips with his teeth, Krishna, with false tears in his eyes. This is how he was. And he broke the pot. And then he went to that place. And we've mentioned before, you may have heard, how Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this particular little happening, Krishna going to a quiet place, sulking, biting his teeth and crying and feeling upset with his mother. Srila Jiva Goswami raises the point that some people think that Krishna, in his pastimes, he gets into all these situations where different emotions, he displays different emotions in different types of relationships with different types of devotees. And so some people say, and even a fair number of people say actually, you know, the thing is, in Krishna consciousness, if you look at it, not just ISKCON, but in the very broad sense that there are four sampradayas, and then there's just Hinduism and people with so many different ideas, and they're not even connected with sampradaya. So in Krishna consciousness, if we look at Krishna consciousness in that context, then there is a very big periphery, a very big marginal area surrounding Krishna consciousness, in which there are people who have some Krishna consciousness of some sort, but it's not really, they don't really understand things, what to speak of properly. Some of them have got, you know, they've usually got some quite strange ideas, and even sometimes some very strange ideas. So some people think, some of those people think, that Krishna, he's got all his devotees and he interacts with them, so many pastimes are there, so many relationships. And some people think that when Krishna is interacting in different ways with the different devotees and displaying different emotions and feelings and like that, some people think he is simply acting, just in a sort of, you might say, you could possibly say, patronizing way. You know, when you pat someone on the head, good boy, good girl, it's kind of patronizing. It's just, yeah. So patronizing, that, oh well, this Yashoda, she thinks I'm her son, which I'm not, because I'm God. But she thinks I'm her son, and she's nice, and I don't want to disappoint her, so I'll act like I'm her son, like put on a performance, yeah, like I'm her son, just to sort of pacify her and keep her, you know, otherwise she might be disappointed. something like that. You follow the idea. Yeah, so we don't want her to be disappointed, because she's a nice devotee. Nice little devotee. Just like, I remember from my childhood, really my childhood, quite some time before Krishna consciousness, my parents used to get a British humorous magazine called Punch. I don't know if you ever heard of it. Don't worry about it if you didn't. Don't go into Google and try and find it. But anyway, I saw this joke once, which I thought a cartoon, and I thought it was really quite funny. It's this American tourist, and he's, you know, big, heavily built. He's got shorts on. He's on holiday. Got shorts on, like a floral shirt, some funny little hat, and a cigar. And his car is broken down. And there's a mechanic under the car, and you can see the legs and the feet of the mechanic. And the man, he's sort of like a Yank, if you know what I mean by that. He's standing with his cigar, and he says to the mechanic, "And what, in your humble opinion, appears to be the problem?" Condescending. It's even worse than patronizing. So these people think that Krishna's something like that. Nice little Mother Yashoda. You know, she's not really so important, but she's very nice. I don't want to disappoint her. So I'll put on an act as if I'm her son and pacify her and keep her happy. But Srila Jiva Goswami discusses this point, and he makes the point that here, in that particular incident, here we find proof that Krishna is not putting on an act. Because you only put on acts if there's an audience. If there's no audience, you don't put on an act. So here's Krishna. You know, he looks very upset. And he's expressing it in different ways. But there's no audience at all. He's in this out-of-the-way place. There's just no one around. But still he's showing these emotions. So Srila Jiva Goswami says, this proves that actually Krishna is completely absorbed in the whole pastime, and just, it's real for him. It's real. This is reality. My mother and how she's treating me, it's real. Otherwise, you know, he would have just sat back and eaten some butter. And then when she came back, then, put on a bit of a performance. But he didn't do like that. So, yes. So then, Mother Yashoda came. And there is this big chase scene. Yes, big chase scene. Where she's chasing Krishna. She's already chased now at this point. She already chased and caught Krishna. Even though he tried to escape, she was trying her best, and she was a middle-aged woman, as we mentioned some other times, middle-aged because they had not had children in, you know, sort of the normal period of time when a married couple might. They were already sort of in their 40s or something like that. And then Krishna came by higher arrangement and blessings and so on. Krishna came. So she's not a young woman. And she couldn't catch agile little Krishna. But her mood of motherly concern became so strong. And Krishna, you know, by mystical power, Krishna was aware of how her mood of motherly concern was just increasing and rising and rising. And he was feeling it to the point it overpowered him. And then she captured him. So the point here is being made that when Krishna was caught, he's just been caught, he admitted to being an offender. Just see. And as is there in the song, you know, we sing, we're going to sing in a while, about rubbing his eyes. Yeah. And the black anjan in Sanskrit. Anjan. The black ointment, kajal, I think they call now. He smeared it. It was smeared around. He was not looking so elegant. Looking a bit sort of, you know, like a child who's just, you get these little children. When I do the first grain ceremonies, we feed the child every time. The sweet, it's usually sweet rice, just goes down their chins. And you see the child, no problem. Yes, just let it go wherever it goes. So, well, you know, Madhu Mangal does that. This is perhaps a little diversion, but a nice one. Madhu Mangal, he has a protruding belly. And somehow it protrudes on an angle. So when he eats sweet rice, and he just, you know, just takes the bowl and just one time, one way, as we say in Chatsworth, just goes for it. And there's just sweet rice just all over. And it goes running down and then over his protruding belly and forms a lake in his navel. This is what I think Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti or someone says, one of the great devotees. Yeah. And he sees this and it sort of gleams there. It has an effulgence. And he feels very happy. Anyway, we'll talk more about that some other time. But yes, so Krishna, you know, he's crying and he's rubbing his eyes and the anjan kajal is smearing here and there and doesn't matter because, you know, life is in such a way, things like this, you know, we don't worry about. It's not the time to worry about whether your anjan is looking nice or smudged. There are more important matters at hand. So, you know, there's a nice pastime also in that regard I can mention. Some of you will have heard if you've been with us in the Varshana area when we've gone to the village of Induleka, called Anjanoka, that there Srimati Radharani was being dressed and decorated for meeting with Krishna secretly, out of the way. But then, in the midst of it all, Krishna came. And at that point in the whole process of preparing Radharani, they had only put anjan around one of her eyes. And the other eye was just normal. And Krishna saw this. And Krishna was a bit shocked. He hadn't seen, anyway, he was a bit shocked. Because normally, you know, the gopis come before him when they're ready. And she was not quite ready yet. So Krishna called out, Niranjan, Niranjan, Niranjan. Yes, no Anjan. Yeah, on the one eye. And this is one place, one sort of origin of the name Niranjan. Although it also means one who's completely detached. That's perhaps a more, that is a more standard meaning, but it can also be taken like that. And then Krishna, there was one black rock there. Krishna rubbed his finger on it and put the Anjan and got Anjan from there and put it around Radharani's eye. And that rock is still there. Have some of you been there with me? Yeah, you must have. The rock's still there, the Anjan Shila. And you can still rub your finger on it and get black. I don't know if they put shoe polish on it. I don't know. Because, you know, many people, there must be many people rubbing their fingers on it for the last 5,000 years. There's the hole where the six Goswamis used to wash their hands and rinse their mouths and the water would go. And that's only 500 years ago. And it became like a hole like this. Yeah. Okay, anyway, we diverge. So, yes. So there is Krishna controlled by Mother Yashoda. And Srila Prabhupada, in the purport, he seems to mainly focus on this point about how what Mother Yashoda achieved in terms of her relationship with, shall we say, God, was just so much more than what was achieved by various other types he mentions, yogis, jnanis, karmis, Vedantists, etc. And Srila Prabhupada says these people cannot even approach Krishna. They must remain very, very far away from him, and they try to enter his effulgence, but they can't even do that. You know Ishapanishad, if you're familiar with Ishapanishad at all? Very important book. The first of the Upanishads, actually, and most definitive. So there, towards the end, the speaker, who's a devotee, well, it's actually the personified Vedas who are devotees. They, you know, they're expressing themselves in certain different ways, and suddenly, oh, they see the Lord, like in the last few verses. But when they see the Lord, they just see effulgence, dazzling effulgence. And they pray there in those last few verses, please remove your effulgence so we can see your face. And we understand that the Lord does that. So it's an interesting point. It's just an interesting point. Consider this. Krishna, his body is extremely effulgent. Extremely effulgent. Just normally. So, but the devotees, devotees, premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santasadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti. By on the basis of their love, prema anjana, again anjan, anjana, meaning ointment. Because their eyes have been anointed with the ointment of love, they don't see the effulgence. They see the Lord. And you might think, well, you know, the Lord is there minus effulgence. But the Lord is never minus effulgence. It's not that sometimes or in some forms he shows effulgence and then many other forms no effulgence. Generally, he's always showing dazzling effulgence. And this is what the impersonalists see. But because they don't have bhakti, and because they don't have the mercy of the Lord, they can't see through the effulgence. But the devotees see through in such ways that apparently there's no effulgence. Krishna's just there, just like we're here, you know, just easily visible to anyone who can see. But otherwise, generally, Krishna's always extremely effulgent. And these people, well, you know what the Brahma Samhita says? I forget the Sanskrit, but if you travel at the speed of the mind for millions of years, still you will get no closer to the Lord than when you started moving. And speed of the mind is extremely fast. You know, Prabhupada talks about that. We're sitting here. Now I'm thinking about Radharadnath Temple in Durban. Means I'm there. The mind is there. That's the speed of the mind. In just a flash, you can be there. What to speak of there? You can be in Vrindavan or in New York. Just there. Oh, look, Radha Govinda. Or then back to London, Radha Landanishwara. This is the speed of the mind. We've just been all over. You can go all over in just seconds, a few seconds. That's the speed of the mind. So even if you travel at that speed for millions of years, you don't get any closer than you were when you started. Yes, and that's the case with all these different types of people. We've mentioned before, some of you might remember, there's a pastime, well, there's Lord Chaitanya's famous Mahaprakash Leela, when he revealed himself more or less for the first time to the gathering of the many devotees who he was associating with. And he showed them how, or he explained to them and showed them sometimes, how they had been with him in other appearances of his, like Lord Ramachandra and various others. So at one point in that whole pastime, as described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya, if I remember correctly, he's speaking to Haridas Thakur, anyway, he's speaking to one of the devotees, and he's emphasizing that I can only be approached by bhakti, by devotion, by love, ultimately love. And to illustrate the point that he can only be approached in that way, and all the other ways that people like the yogis, gyanis, karmis, Vedantists, etc., tapasvis, the different ways they try to approach him, to make it clear how those paths lead to failure. Even though in the minds of the people, as far as they're concerned, they're trying to realize God. Lord Chaitanya tells the story from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, when Krishna enters Mathura, the story of the washerman who was the first person Krishna stopped a few people. He was the first person, the washerman, Kamsa's washerman, coming with a whole load of the king's clothes, just freshly washed and ironed, and, you know, royal clothes. And Krishna stopped him. And Krishna, in his boyish way, you know what boys are like, boys will be boys, and girls will be girls too. Sure, okay. But boys will be boys. It works both ways. Boys will be boys. Krishna just came up to him and in a very, well, you know this word, boisterous? I think it's got its roots in boys. Boisterous, you know, very assertive, young, and kind of cheeky way. Krishna said, "Oh, you got such nice clothes. Wouldn't you like to give some to us cowherd boys?" Nodding his head, which we mention sometimes is a strategy when you're doing book distribution. Nod your head as you're talking, because it'll influence the people to think yes. Seriously, I'm not joking actually. And keep saying yes. So Krishna approached him like that. You know, wouldn't you like to give some of this nice cloth to us cowherd boys? Yes. But unfortunately, the washerman didn't have the sort of the background of consciousness, of heart, to get it. And he became very indignant and arrogant and refused, and he became very rude. That you're just from the forest. Why don't you go back to the forest and you can make clothes out of some leaves. That's more suitable for you. So Krishna didn't appreciate that. And you know that story too. Krishna gave him a slap. As we say in Chatsworth, what is it? What happened? And it knocked the man's head off. Do they say it in Phoenix too? They don't say it? Not sure. Not sure, okay. In Lens? All right, anyway. The man's head fell off and they took all the clothes and used them. So Lord Chaitanya told this story. And Lord Chaitanya then at the end said, actually, that washerman had performed severe austerities for many lifetimes just to see God. And finally, he got to see God. But because his heart was hard and there was no devotion, there was no love for the Lord at all. He was just in a different space altogether. So even though he saw the Lord, which was his desire and reason for what he'd been doing for many lifetimes, he couldn't appreciate, couldn't understand, and he offended the Lord. So Prabhupada makes this point here that these jnanis, yogis, etc., etc., they cannot approach Krishna like Mother Yashoda. You know, what to speak of as Mother Yashoda would tell Krishna as a little boy when... How old are you? Oh, you're big. Okay, when Krishna was smaller. When Krishna was just small, actually. Yeah, I know. 2 or 3, something like that. Then Bhagavatam describes Mother Yashoda and her lady friends. It was the program. You get up in the morning, you go over to Mother Yashoda's house. And that's what the ladies did. It's just every day that's what they did. And they would just play around with Krishna. And so the Bhagavatam describes, they would tell Krishna, dance, Krishna, dance, dance. And little Krishna, you know, he's not, well, even, you know, some of us also, if someone says, dance, dance, we may be a bit awkward. But he, you know, he couldn't walk or run or yet. He hadn't reached that point. So he must have been like 2. So he would dance. He would try to dance. But it was very awkward. And he sort of hop around in odd ways. And the ladies would laugh at him. It was just, you know, one of the things they did for amusement. Tell Krishna to dance and laugh at him. But Krishna didn't feel offended. You know, can you imagine you're trying to dance in kirtan, some devotees gather around and they're sort of scoping you out. And they start laughing at how you're trying to dance. It would be discouraging, wouldn't it? But Krishna wasn't discouraged. He would carry on dancing, sort of hopping and jumping and something like that. Because of their love, Mother Yashoda and the others, because of their love. So what to speak of someone praying to Krishna, praying to God, I want this, I want that. What to speak about that? You know, there's just recently I saw, was it just one? Maybe it was on Saturday. Anyway, just a few days ago, there was this big shooting incident in Pittsburgh, America, in a synagogue, the Jewish people. And they were old Jewish people too. The oldest one who died was 97. And you know, I've seen just a couple of reports and people saying, yes, you know, we're praying. We're praying. In times of like catastrophe like this, people get stimulated to pray for some sort of mercy, I'm not sure what exactly, but pray it won't happen again, or pray for those who died, something like that, some prayer. And of course, they are hoping, or perhaps they're expecting, but it's certainly they're hoping that whatever their prayers are, that they're going to be answered. We don't know if they are. We don't know if they are. The people got killed because of their karma, and they'll go to wherever their destinations are according to their karma. And it's more or less just like a sentiment, oh, we'll pray. And whether it influences Krishna, that Krishna thinks, oh, okay, right, now I better do this. Well, you know, we have really serious doubts about that. Because Krishna, even when Mother Yashoda was trying to catch him, she couldn't catch him initially. And she's Mother Yashoda. She didn't just catch him like that. She had to make some special effort. And then Krishna submitted to her. So great devotees like Mother Yashoda and the other residents of Vrindavan, they have this, not, it's not really a capability, but this transcendent, because they have so much love, Krishna becomes influenced. And therefore they say this, they say that. And, you know, another one, which we've mentioned before, and Prabhupada talks about it. When Krishna's small, he's also like maybe 2, just small boy. And Nanda Maharaj comes home from herding the cows all day. And Mother Yashoda tells Krishna, bring your father's shoes. And there's even a picture, actually you may have seen, it was on the front of a Back to Godhead many years ago. There's Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, and Krishna is bringing the shoes on his head. Yeah. And Prabhupada describes how Mother Yashoda sometimes, she says, bring Nanda Maharaj his cushion. He has a big, because he's, you know, the local king of the cowherds. So he has a special cushion for sitting on. And it's, you know, anyway, it's bigger than the ones you're sitting on. It's a king-size cushion. And it's full of cotton. So it's heavy. And Krishna's small. And Prabhupada describes Krishna with both hands. He takes like one corner of it. And he tries to pull it. But it's too heavy. It's too heavy. So, you know, he's struggling with it. And eventually he just can't do it. So he stops. And he looks around for someone to help him. But in order to show, you know, that I'm not really a weakling, he does things like this. He does make some motions of his arms, Prabhupada says, indicate that actually he is strong, but still he could use some help. So, I mean, this is just, it's amazing actually. These people, these devotees, they say to Krishna, you do that, he does it. And you do something else, and he does it. Because of love. Because of love. So as they say, what do they say? Love makes the world go round. Well, I don't know about that. But love makes the spiritual world go round. Definitely. I think the material world, lust makes it go round. Sure. It's amazing. But love makes the spiritual world go around. Everything is happening because of love. And because of love, Krishna is doing so many very personal things for his devotees. So that's why we're here, to develop love, or to uncover the love which is already there within our heart. As I'm sure you've heard before, Srila Prabhupada said, we're told, that Krishna consciousness is the development of a loving relationship. This is what it is. This is actually what we're doing. It's the development of a loving relationship with Krishna disguised as a process. It's disguised as a process which may appear a little mechanical or something like that. In certain respects, you must do this, you must not do that. But actually, what's it about? The development of a loving relationship. And we should always remember that. And always, as we're doing our activities in Krishna consciousness, aspire for that sort of mercy, and desire that. And if we try sincerely, Krishna will give more and more, until finally, well, he'll give more mercy and more experience of love, until finally one fine morning, you will all wake up, devotees, and you will be in Goloka Vrindavan with Krishna. Yes. Because you tried to develop love. Yeah, sincerely. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Any comment or question?
Thank you. one verse where it was described that Krishna was crying with false tears.
Yes.
So that sounds like knowing Krishna's inner emotion. So how does Sukadeva Goswami know Krishna's inner emotion, that it was actually false tears?
Well, because he's Sukadeva Goswami. You know, there's a story, there are many stories, that he was the parrot of Radharani, some say. Yeah. But anyway, whatever, but he's a very great devotee. So he understands the mind of Krishna. And, you know, you get Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur to some degree, Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushan, when they comment, they translate and comment on verses in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Well, at least Baladeva Vijayabhushan, I think, is more just the Gita. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is both. Then when they comment, particularly Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he comments as if Krishna is speaking more than what the verse he's commenting on, Krishna's saying in that verse, you follow? Because he has that sort of insight to understand that how Krishna will think and feel under these particular circumstances and then the next circumstances. It's like that. Yeah, it's deep. They're actually sort of, they're in the pastimes that they're describing. And therefore they're able to elaborate and sort of expand on them. Because they're there with the Lord. Yes.
So what I'm hearing is, and this is what I usually think when I read the verses of the Bhagavatam, that when you can picture, like in this case, talking about the Lord making, for instance, the Lord making a statement, the Sukadeva Goswami making a statement, while actually seeing the presence of the Lord doing something. So the emotion, which actually goes with the statement, comes out. So
yes.
The understanding
actually
hits your emotion. So you get the correct understanding, not so much just the philosophical essence.
If we listen nicely, then we'll also, it'll touch our hearts, the essence will touch our hearts, because it's real.
Yes.
It's not just a literary description. It is, but it's not just. It's actually what it is describing. And the more, as a person advances, the more a person advances, the more they will have experience of it themselves. And ultimately, they'll find themselves in it. Yeah. Gosh, that's deep, isn't it? Sure. Hope we're not going off the deep end. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. So let's do Dhammadharastakam, yeah? You're organizing? He's organizing.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Holiness Bhakti Chaitanya Swami Maharaj ki. Firstly, we'd like to thank you, Maharaj, for sharing this wonderful nectar of these pastimes that we do know, but on a more philosophical and deeper note. And I can personally say that this being here today has definitely helped me in observing this month. So thank you very much, Maharaj. Before we go on to the next part of the program, I've been asked to convey all give a few announcements. Today's feast has been sponsored by Hena Lokachandar and Daksha Mistry. And the feast has been cooked by Swasti Mataji. Let's give them a big Hari Bol. Tomorrow marks the auspicious occasion of the appearance day of Radhakund, and ISKCON Mujer will be celebrating this starting at 6:45 p.m. tomorrow. Our guest speaker will be His Grace Bhima Das. For this month of Kartik at ISKCON Mujer, we will be doing daily readings of Krishna books, singing Damodar Astakam, and offering up lands to Lord Damodar. So please extend this invite. And we also have some Kartik packs if you'd like to extend to anyone else for this month. This Friday is also our bi-weekly Friday night bhajan, so please join us for this as well. And if you'd like more information about the temple activities, please see our weekly email that goes up. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So we'll now arrange lamps and sing Damodar Astakam.
Okay. Who's going to sing?